From KCUR, I'm Steve Kraske, and this is Up to Date. In an age of video games, smartphones, and other screen time, competition for reading has become fierce. But as studies show, there are a multitude of reasons for children to sit down with a good book instead. And today is a great time to find out what kids are reading. This hour, a look at the best children's and young adult books from 2013. Our friends from the Johnson County Library are here with their annual picks. But first, a look at why the Johnson County Library recently decided to change its policy prohibiting guns in library buildings. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Only a week left until the wrapping paper comes off and kids squeal as they break out the new tablet computers, smartphones, toys, and, well, how about books? Studies show that reading has countless benefits for children, but with so many choices, where do you turn? Well, it's time for one of our favorite shows around here, a look back at the best children's and young adult books from 2013. Our friends from the Johnson County Public Library are here with their very insightful picks. But first, a look at why the board of the Johnson County Public Library recently decided to change its policy prohibiting guns in library buildings. The change takes effect on January 1st. With us is Kansas State Representative Stephanie Clayton. She's a Republican whose district covers parts of Leawood, Overland Park, and Prairie Village. Representative Clayton opposed a shift in state law about concealed carry firearms, and she joins us this morning from her home in Overland Park. Stephanie Clayton, so good to have you. Good morning.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning to you.
Also with us is Mitra Templin. She's chair of the Johnson County Library Board, and she's at her office in Shawnee. Mitra, happy holidays to you as well. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Steve.
Well, Representative Clayton, you oppose this legislation. Tell us why.
I read the bill.
Okay.
But in all seriousness, after reading the bill and after review of the bill, it violates a tenet of government that I believe in, which is imposing the state's will on other duly elected bodies.
Ah.
In the case of this, it imposes our will on the duly elected county commission, as well as elected members of various municipalities, and so I rose in opposition to it.
Hey, how much feedback, Stephanie, did you get from your constituents when it came to this new law?
I received one email asking me to vote in favor for the law, and I received about 150 asking me not to.
Huh. So it was pretty lopsided then.
Indeed.
Mitra, did you know the minute the legislation passed that eventually your library system would have to allow guns in its buildings?
We assumed that we would, yes. When we first heard of the legislation, our attorney, Fred Logan, advised us that this would affect us, and we did apply for the six-month extension. It went into effect July 1st, 2013, so we have until January 1st. So we were exempt from that period as we kind of went through the process with the county of determining if it would be feasible for us to prohibit concealed carry in the library.
You know, there was this caveat in the law that allows for adequate security measures. If you have those in place, you can still keep the prohibition against carrying concealed weapons in a library. Why wasn't the library system allowed to bring its standards up to adequate security measures, Mitra?
Well, we do have considerable security measures, and we have security cameras. But adequate security measures under the new law means metal detectors as well as a security officer on hand at each of the public buildings. And when the county looked at that for the cost, it was going to run for each public entrance, you're looking at $300,000 to $800,000, which would include the metal detector as well as the salary for an armed security personnel. So that being the case with 13-plus buildings that we have, and some of those buildings having more than one entrance, you're looking at a considerable amount of money to provide, quote-unquote, adequate security measures to the library.
Hmm. Representative Clayton, I know you're not on the library board, but I'm just curious about how do you think this is going to change the culture of the libraries, you know, inside your legislative district?
Well, as a parent who attends the library quite a bit, I have to say that I hope that it absolutely does not change the culture of the libraries. Now, the nature of this bill, now law, especially when it comes to the rights of people who have are licensed to carry a concealed weapon, is that library staff members cannot ask a concealed carry holder if they are carrying a weapon. Now, we have as of yet to see a violent crime that was committed by a concealed carry holder. So, again, I'm hoping that we've got responsible citizens who are keeping track of their firearms while they're in our libraries. And, indeed, if this works the way that a lot of the proponents of the bill wanted it to work, we won't see any change.
Hmm. Mitra Templin, as chair of the Johnson County Library Board, same question. I mean, how do you think this is going to change the culture of your libraries?
Well, remember, the only people that are going to be allowed to carry guns into the library are those that, under the law, have a permit, a concealed carried permit. So I'm hoping, as Stephanie mentioned, that it will not change the culture of the library. Guns are still not allowed in the library unless the person is licensed to carry that concealed weapon.
Hmm. Stephanie Clayton, again, a state representative from Overland Park, Prairie Village, and Leawood. Did libraries across the state oppose this legislation in Topeka? Was there a coordinated effort made here?
I did not necessarily hear from any libraries. I didn't hear from any, you know, there are some public museums that have a lot of children in them, of which I'm also concerned somewhat about this law. But no, I did not hear from them. I heard more from municipalities and just from everyday citizens in general.
Is the legislature, the legislation that the Kansas legislature passed, it requires security measures in all state buildings, Representative Clayton, but school buildings were exempt. Why not make an exception for libraries as well?
It simply was not something that was brought up in committee or brought up as an amendment on the floor. Now, I can tell you that I have been hearing rumors that we may have some possible fixes to this bill, but again, things are very, very vague. Nothing has been filed yet at this point, but I would like you all to definitely stay tuned because I have hopes that we might be able to make some adjustments to allow for more local control.
Do you think that a bill like that would have a chance in this legislature, this very conservative legislature, Stephanie?
I hope that it does. I never abandon hope when it comes to making legislation better.
Yeah. Mitra, did the Johnson County Library system, did it protest or come out against this new law when it was being considered?
Yes, we did in our board meetings, and we expressed our concern to the Johnson County Commissioners. And the Kansas Library Association, Joe Butler, the Kansas librarian, I do understand that they tried to lobby against the measure of allowing concealed weapons in libraries across the state. But, you know, this law passed overwhelmingly 31-8 in the Senate and 104-16 in the House. It was obviously a bipartisan vote, and it's not clear that any lobbying effort of any kind would have been successful here.
Yeah. Mitra, just a final question. How do your staff members around the county at the various library branches feel about this new policy? How concerned, if any, how concerned are they?
Well, we do have policies in place to deal with a patron that may create an uncomfortable situation. The way we are going forth, we're going to address the concealed carry and, very similar to feeling an uncomfortable situation, have a protocol for staff to follow should they once again feel in an uncomfortable situation, which would involve calling law enforcement. But remember, these just noticing that somebody has a concealed carry is not grounds for calling law enforcement. So we will go on the same policies because we do not want to put any of our patrons or staff members in an unsafe situation.
Well, Representative Stephanie Clayton, we will keep an eye on this, maybe stay in touch with you as the new session begins. And I want to thank you both for taking time with us today. Again, State Representative Stephanie Clayton and Mitra Templin, who's chair of the Johnson County Library Board. Thank you both. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Steve.
And now our annual review of some of the best children and youth books of the year. With us once again from the Johnson County Public Library, our Kate McNair will give us some recommendations for young adults. Kate, nice to have you again.
Thanks.
Debbie McLeod is back. She'll survey books for middle readers. Debbie, how are you?
Oh, pretty good, Steve. How are you?
And Dennis Ross is back. He'll talk to us about books for very, very, very young readers. Dennis, happy holidays to you.
Same to you, Steve.
Well, lots of good books here. Was it a good year, Debbie, for books for kids, or what do you think?
I think it was an excellent year.
Yeah?
We saw some really outstanding books, seeing a lot of trends. Fairy tales are really, really popular, or what we call fractured fairy tales, where the outline is there from the fairy tale, but then they go on a tangent. And it's really been a good year, I think, in all, both for the very young and for young adults.
Kate, zombies still a big deal? You've been talking zombies on this show for years.
I have, and they still have a special place in my heart, but I think in terms of the publishing world, post-apocalypse is where it's at right now.
Yeah.
I have quite a few of those today and some alien invasions as well, so that could be a new trend appearing.
Dennis, for young readers, what are you seeing out there?
Well, I agree with Debbie and Kate. I think it's been a pretty strong year overall.
Yeah.
I tend to read a lot more of the young adult than the younger kids' books, and I think it was an extremely strong year for that market.
Well, that's great. That's great. Okay, well, let's go to some books right now. By all means, if our listeners or their kids want to make a recommendation for us today about a great book they read this year that maybe other kids would want to read, 816-235-2888 is our phone number, our email address, update@kcur.org, or you can tweet us @kcur. Update. Kate, tell us about The Fifth Wave.
This is a book by Rick Yancey, and I said before that post-apocalypse has been quite the rage, dystopian novels, and this one is a fun take on it that's about alien invasions.
Yeah.
So it takes place after the four waves of an alien invasion. The first wave is an electronic pulse that renders all machines useless. The second are tsunamis that destroy all the coastal cities.
Tsunamis.
Yes.
How about sharks? Are sharks in here?
No, sharknadoes. And the third is an avian plague that's called the Red Death, and the last one are called silencers, and they're alien consciousnesses that have been implanted in human fetuses and have been raised and have infiltrated our ranks.
My goodness. The main
character's name is Cassie. She's a 16-year-old girl living on her own. All she has is a teddy bear and an M16.
She's looking holidays.
Yeah. She's looking for her little brother along with a mysterious and hunky fellow named Evan. And the second story in the book is told by a fellow named Zombie, who used to be a star athlete at his school and has been inducted into the military and turned into a super soldier to kill aliens.
My goodness. That's The Fifth Wave by Richard Yancey.
Yes.
You like this one?
I love it. It's an action-packed book. It's really long, so it's great. Not really long. Not so long. You can't finish
thick.
It. But it is a pretty good book, so it'll keep you entertained for a while. But it moves fast. Mm-hmm. So if you like action, you like adventure, you like suspense, it's a great pick.
And when you talk about kids, you know, for young adults, you're talking about kids how old for a book like this?
For this one, probably high school.
Okay.
Just because of some of the action, and I just think it's a pretty long book. So to go through it, if you're a middle schooler, if you're really passionate about it, I think you could go through it.
Is that a trend you're seeing, this notion of this book moves really quickly? I'm thinking with all the distractions kids have these days, a book pretty dang well better move quickly, right?
Yes. And I must admit, I too am a reader who is pushed by plot. I want things to have action. I want things happening.
Yeah.
So a lot of the books that I have that I like to read are plot driven.
Okay. All right. Dennis Ross, take us to The Key and the Flame by Claire Caterer.
Caterer. Yes. Claire Caterer is a local author. She grew up actually pretty close to the Central Resource Library in Johnson County, and she moved away, and now she's moved back and lives in the Kansas City area. And actually, just a quick plug, she's going to be appearing at the Central Resource Library January 11th to talk about her book. She describes this book as a Narnia-like fantasy adventure, and I would agree with her about that. It's a main character is a girl named Holly, who's 11, and her life is boring, and she wants nothing more than to have an adventure.
Don't we all?
Yes.
Yeah, I need an adventure.
Well, her family goes to visit England, and she is given a very unusual key, and the key happens to open a door into a world called Angliel, which is a place where magic is outlawed. and magicians and those who practice magic are hunted. But while she's there, she has to learn to find and use her own magic to save herself and her little brother and their friend Everett. So it's very engaging, very well-written story. It's the first in a series.
Where do people get these ideas?
That's usually the first question that kids ask authors when they...
Is that the first question?
It's where do you get your ideas?
Yeah. And they say, well... I
think she likes England and she likes fantasy adventures. And so, yeah. I mean, like most writers, I think she writes to please herself.
This is for grades 4 through 8, you point out.
I would
here.
Say so, yes.
Yeah, okay. Debbie McLeod, let's move to The True Blue Scouts of Sugar Man Swamp.
This is a delightful book. I absolutely love this book. It's almost like a Carl Hiaasen type book for the younger set.
Ah.
And it takes place in the bayou. And you have 12-year-old Clay, and he loves the bayou. The bayou is his home. And there is Sonny Buku, who is a very rich developer, and he wants to develop the swamp into this tourist attraction starring this female alligator wrestler. Then you have Bingo and Jemiah, who are the true blue scouts. They're raccoon twins, and they set up their little headquarters in an abandoned DeSoto, which when there happens to be a nearby lightning strike, the dashboard lights up, and they think it's a message from the Sugar Man. So they feel
My
they are on a mission.
Goodness.
Oh, it's fun. It's a great read aloud. In fact, Lyle Lovett did the audio version of it.
Oh, boy.
So yeah, you can imagine the voice. The voice is great in this book.
Well, we don't have Lyle Lovett today. We do have Danny
yes,
Alexander, who's an assistant producer.
And Danny will do
for
just as well. Yeah. I am sure.
This is for kids. What age, by the way?
I would say for read aloud, you could read aloud to a 5-year-old. But as far as independent reading, I would say 8 to 12.
Okay, well, Danny will read us from The True Blue Scouts of Sugar Man Swamp.
Clever could apply to someone else, too, namely the world champion gator wrestler of the Northern Hemisphere. Jagger Stitch knew exactly what she wanted, fame and fortune. She wanted it in spades, and she knew exactly how to get it by turning the Sugar Man Swamp into the Gator World Wrestling Arena and theme park.
Yeah!
It would require taking down several hundred old trees to clear the space for the stadium. She would also need to fill in at least 2,000 acres of marsh to make a parking lot for the millions of people who she knew were clamoring to see her mighty, mighty self. Shoot, she was already in negotiations for a reality television show and everything. Was there even one tiny shred of decency in Jagger Stitch? Well, she did appreciate the swamp for being a nursery for baby gators. Then again, why would she need a natural nursery when she could just raise the little hatchlings herself in the swimming pool that she planned to install? She could charge extra for letting people swim with the baby gators. Heck, she could even charge more for letting them swim with their mamas. Besides, what were old dead trees and mucky marsh worth to anyone? Her point, exactly. So really, if you thought about it, maybe there wasn't so much decency in Jagger Stitch. Clever might be the wrong word, too. Let's use driven. That seems more apt.
Well, let the word go forth that Lyle Lovett's got nothing on Danielle. I mean, honestly, Pete, that was terrific. Okay, again, that's The True Blue Scouts of Sugar Man Swamp by Kathy
Appelt.
Yeah, okay. Very good. If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking about some of the best reads for kids from 2013. Again, if you have a recommendation for us, or maybe if your child does, we'd love to hear from them too. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Our email address, uptodate@kcur.org. Option 3 is to tweet us @KCUR. Up to date. Kate McNair, tell us about The Coldest Girl in Cold Town by Holly Black.
This is a great read for anybody who loved Twilight, or perhaps people who also dislike Twilight. This takes place after vampires have been living in the shadows for years, glorified as sparkly lovers and dangerous enemies on television and in books. But now vampires have revealed themselves to humans. There's a nasty outbreak of vampirism due to a misplaced act of mercy, and now the world cannot ignore vampires' existence. There are infected cities that have been walled off to the public, and they're called cold towns, where vampires are going to exist.
I see.
And they're an exquisite prison for them. Humans who are enthralled with the beauty and the danger of vampires flock to these cities in the hopes that they will be turned into vampires themselves. And the story takes place when Tana, our main character, who has a history of being attacked by vampires, is at a party. She wakes up in the bathtub with a hangover. It's out in a farmhouse in the middle of nowhere. And she's wandering around trying to find a bite to eat in this house, stumbling over the other hungover partygoers, when she realizes that they're not, in fact, passed out on the floor, but the other partygoers have all been murdered by vampires.
My goodness, Merry Christmas.
So yeah. She tries to get her car keys, and she's going to run out of the house, and she can't find them. And she eventually locates them in a room next to her ex-boyfriend, who's been bitten by a vampire and then tied to a bed, and another mysterious vampire named Gavriel. And she collects those two, escapes being attacked by other vampires, and they get into her car, and they run off, and she's going to try and drop them off in a cold town. But the trick is not getting into cold towns. It's getting back out again.
I knew it.
Yes.
Yes.
It's a great vampire novel with lots of action. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a satire on other vampire books that we may have seen recently, and I loved it.
And this would be for high school kids.
Yeah.
Now, what is it about young people these days? Vampires, death, drinking? What's going on out there?
You know, a lot of people have theorized that there's just not a lot of hope in the world when you look at the economy, that there isn't hope for jobs or the dream of being able to follow your passions and do what you want. So these worlds where there's dystopias and vampires and this darkness in books is just reflecting a lack of hope in young people's lives today.
Goodness.
I just think they make for great storytelling.
Okay. Sure. I mean, do you buy that theory, that lack of hope, based on what the conversation you have with kids or not?
I don't know. I think it depends on the reader. I like to read fantastical things that aren't like my life at all.
Yeah.
So reading things about vampires or alien invasions or dystopias, they aren't like my life. So it's an interesting time for me to escape, to try something out. And you just see a world that you wouldn't see otherwise.
Well, it's going to be trouble for authors because we've been talking on the show even yesterday with Kevin Collison from The Star about how the local economy, the national economy, things are picking up. So authors are going to have to turn from darkness to light here at some point.
We'll see what's
soon.
Next.
I think you'll always have the darkness, but the thing that makes children's books and children's literature different is that there's always that element of hope, no matter what, even though it might be a different kind of hope than what you think it is.
Yeah.
But even in all of these books, you know, there is some sort of redemption of a kind in all these books. But yeah, kids like darkness.
Well,
who
doesn't?
Yeah.
People have always liked to experience dangerous things through books or movies. You know, it's kind of a safe distance.
Well, they're more exciting than the nice people.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, if you're just joining us, we're talking about the best books, best kids' books of 2013. Dennis Ross, let's go to one, Fortunately the Milk by Neil Gaiman.
Gaiman, yes. And he rewrites a lot of different kinds of things.
I recognize his name.
Groups in fact, he wrote one of my favorite adult books this year called The Ocean at the End of the Lane. Also, this is a excellent read aloud for the whole family, especially young children. It's I saw one tweet that they described it as Roald Dahl tried to write Doctor Who after a marathon viewing of Monty Python. And it's got a little bit of everything. It's about this dad who goes to the store for milk because they're out of milk and the kids want to have their cereal. And it takes him a long time to get back. And when he finally returns and they say, "What took you so long?" he starts on this long story explaining why what took him so long to get back with the milk.
Well, Stephen Steigman, our executive producer here of UpToDate, is going to read us a little bit from
I just got a pay bump, didn't I?
The Milk. Yeah. Super producer.
"Where have you been all this time?" asked my sister. "Ah," said my father. "Yes, well, funny you should ask me that." "You ran into somebody you knew," I said, "and you lost track of time." "I bought the milk," said my father, "and I did indeed say a brief hello to Mr. Ronson from over the road who was buying a paper. I walked out of the corner shop and heard something odd that seemed to be coming from above me. It was a noise like this. I looked up and I saw this huge silver disc hovering in the air above Marshall Road. Hello," I said to myself, "that's not something you see every day." And then something odd happened. "That wasn't odd?" I asked. "Well, something odder," said my father. "The odd thing was a beam of light that came out of the disc, a glittery, shimmery beam of light that was visible even in the daylight. And the next thing I knew, I was being sucked up into the disc. Fortunately, I had put the milk into my coat pocket. The deck of the disc was metal, as big as a playing field, or bigger. We have come to your planet from a world very far away," said the people in the disc. I call them people, but they were a bit green and rather globby, and they looked very grumpy indeed. "Now, as a representative of your species, we demand that you give us ownership of the whole planet. We are going to remodel it." "I jolly well won't," I said. "Then," it said, "we will bring all your enemies here and have them make you miserable until you agree to sign this planet over to us." I was going to point out to them that I didn't have any enemies when I noticed a large metal door with emergency exit. Do not open this for any reason. This means you. On it. I opened the door. Don't do that, said a green globby person. You'll let the space-time continuum in. But it was too late. I had already pushed open the door. I jumped.
Is this a man who reads to his kids or not?
Yeah.
Experienced the first book step, reader, you know, there.
It goes on from there. He jumps out of the spaceship, and fortunately he kept tight hold of the milk, so when he splashed into the sea, he didn't lose it. And then when the evil pirate queen makes him walk the plank, fortunately I had the milk tucked away safely, so I didn't lose it when I was snatched up by a time-traveling dinosaur in a hot air balloon. And it just goes on and on. But every time, you know, fortunately the milk was safe. And,
well, so, fortunately the milk is the title of the book. The author is Neil Gaiman. We have a tweet from L. Probus, who recommends another book by Neil Gaiman. That one is titled Instructions.
Well, I've not read that one.
Neil Gaiman clearly is pretty prolific here, it sounds like.
Very.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Debbie, let's do one more book before a break here. Mr. Tiger Goes Wild.
Yes, this is a picture book by Peter Brown, who he did, you know, You Will Be My Friend, which was A Little Bear Lucy. This is about Mr. Tiger, and he lives in a world where all the animals walk upright and they're dressed. And one day, he decides to go wild and walk on all fours and take off his clothes. And at first, all the other animals are just in shock. You don't do that. You have to be proper. And then they see he's having so much fun that they all decide to try it, and what do you know? They all go wild. So it's just a fun book about following, you know, what you want to do. Let's show, you know, throw in a little, you know, different things, be a little wild and have fun.
And the beauty of being naked. That's what we're talking about.
If you're
here,
covered,
right?
In orange fur naked and stripes, yeah. Why not?
Our second half, we will do this show. We'll all be naked here in the studio here. That's Mr. Tiger Goes Wild by Peter Brown. Debbie McLeod recommends that one to us. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll cover a whole lot more great books for kids from the year 2013. We'll get to more zombies and more what else, Kate? All kinds of stuff here, right?
Oh, yes. We have Hansel and Gretel, and we have reality TV. It's going to be great.
All kinds
and
of
Robin
stuff.
Hood.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's take a break. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Well, this hour, we're talking about the best kids' books of 2013. We're visiting with our buddies from the Johnson County Public Library, Kate McNair, Debbie McLeod, and Dennis Ross. And let's see. Dennis, you're up next with Zombie Baseball. No. Where are we? We skipped a page.
Fangirl.
Yeah. Fangirl. Yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Tell us about
Fangirl.
Fangirl is
by Rainbow Rowell, who's an author from Omaha, and it's a great book for any high schooler who's obsessed with anything, be it a TV show, a book, a music group. This is a wonderful book for those, or for those going to college soon next year. This is about a girl named Kath, and she's starting her freshman year of college, and she has several setbacks. Her twin sister, Ren, has decided not to room with her so that they can meet other people, but they are a package deal. So Kath doesn't really know how to be herself all alone. Mm-hmm. And she's also dealing with her father's mental illness. And on top of it all, college is taking away time from writing her Simon Snow fan fiction. It's very popular online. Simon Snow, it would remind readers of Harry Potter. And Kath loves to live in that world and play with those characters and write her own story. And it's all about what happens her first year at college. And there's even a little bit of romance. So we have a read aloud today where Kath is explaining for those who don't know what fan fiction is. So it's a nice little introduction to what Kath does.
Well, Beth Lipoff from our up-to-date staff will read a little bit here from Fangirl.
Don't change the subject, Levi said, grinning some more. You write stories about Simon Snow. You think this is funny. Yes, Levi said, but also sort of cool. Tell me about your stories. Kath pressed the tines of her fork into her placemat. They're just like, I take characters and I put them in new situations. Like deleted scenes? Sometimes. More like what ifs. Like, what if Baz wasn't evil? What if Simon never found the five blades? What if Agatha found them instead? What if Agatha was evil? Agatha couldn't be evil, Levi argued, leaning forward, pointing at Kat with his fork. She's pure of heart, a lion of dawn. Kath narrowed her eyes. How do you know that? I told you, I've seen the movies. Well, in my world, if I want to make Agatha evil, I can. Or I can make her a vampire. Or I can make her an actual lion. Simon wouldn't like that. Simon doesn't care. He's in love with Baz. Levi guffawed. You don't get many opportunities to use that word, Kath thought, but this is one of them. Simon isn't gay, he said. In my world, he is. But Baz is his nemesis. I don't have to follow any of the rules. The original books already exist. It's not my job to rewrite them. Is it your job to make Simon gay? You're getting distracted by the gay thing, Kath said. She was leaning forward now, too. It is distracting, Levi giggled. Did guys giggle or chuckle? Kath hated the word chuckle. The whole point of fan fiction, she said, is that you get to play inside someone else's universe, rewrite the rules, or bend them. The story doesn't have to end when Gemma Leslie gets tired of it. You can stay in this world that you love, as long as you want, as long as you keep thinking of new stories. Fan fiction, Levi said. Yes. Kath was embarrassed by how sincere she sounded, how excited she felt whenever she actually talked about this. She was so used to keeping it a secret, used to assuming people would think she was a freak and a nerd and a pervert. Maybe Levi thought all of those things. Maybe he just found freaks and perverts amusing.
You can tell Beth Lipoff is a volunteer at the Johnson County Public Library. What a terrific job. That's Beth Lipoff reading from Fangirl by Rainbow Rowell. Just, I got that right?
Yeah, yeah, just one of two wonderful young adult books by Rainbow Rowell this year.
Right. And the other one being?
She had another one called Eleanor and Park, and they've both been very well received by reviewers and the public.
Well, that sounds great. That sounds great. Let's move on to one of our favorite authors here at Up to Date, Kate DiCamillo, who I guess we went to a classroom at my kids' old elementary school a few years ago, Westwood View Elementary in Westwood, and Kate came with us to a classroom. We did the show from the classroom, and the kids just absolutely lit up around her. It was just such a good time. And Dennis, this book is Flora and Ulysses.
Yeah, I actually lit up the one time I got to meet her, too. Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day. You were talking about the year in literature. And when we get asked about for book recommendations, we often focus on what's new. You know, it's easy for us to do that. But really, the old ones are still really good. And this year just so happened.
I often wonder about that. The emphasis is always on new books. There's some incredible books that might be a few years old, but we tend to go past them pretty quickly now.
Well, this year, some of my favorite new books that came out this year were my favorite old authors, including Kate DiCamillo. It was her and Cynthia Voigt and Cynthia Ryland and Patricia McLaughlin all had really excellent books this year.
Wow.
And Kate DiCamillo, I don't think I've ever read one of hers that I didn't just love. This is about a girl named Flora Bell Buckman, and she's a self-described cynic, and she's read every issue of this comic book called Terrible Things Can Happen to You. And anyway, she's looking out the window and she watches in horror as her next door neighbor, Mrs. Tickham, vacuums up a squirrel in the backyard. So Flora goes running out in the back in the backyard.
That thought has crossed my mind a time or two.
So Flora has to run out in the yard and save him. She gives him CPR and she saves the squirrel's life and a squirrel who ends up being named Ulysses after the vacuum cleaner model. When he is revived, he is born with new powers. He has super strength, and he can fly, and he can type misspelled poetry on the typewriter. And so pretty soon, Flora and Ulysses become best of friends. And through that friendship, she learns to maybe be not quite so cynical about life. And she also learns some new words, like capacious heart, and is full of things like holy bagumba and holy unanticipated occurrences. And, DiCamillo said that she set out to tell the story of a vacuum cleaner and a squirrel, and that she ended up writing a book about superheroes, cynics, poetry, love, giant donuts, little shepherdess lamps, and how we are all working to find our way home.
Okay. Well, any book with someone, a character named Flora Bell Buckman has to be something worth taking a look at. That's Kate DiCamillo's Flora and Ulysses, The Illuminated Adventures. Okay. Debbie, let's go to Will in Scarlet by Matthew Cody.
Yes, well, most of us are familiar with The Legend of Robin Hood, and Will Scarlet was one of his merry men. And this is sort of like a prequel to Robin Hood. And Will is a 13-year-old young lord. His father is off with King Richard and the Crusades, and they're just coming back. And you have the Sheriff of Nottingham involved. And what happens is one of King John's henchmen show up, and Will's mother insults him, and the sheriff of Nottingham, of course, is spineless and lets this person take over. And Will escapes into Sherwood Forest. And there he comes across Gilbert and his band of merry men. And you go, oh, wait a minute, where's Robin Hood? Well, Robin Hood's off in the corner, just a drunken sot, because he just does not want to take on responsibility or anything. And Will gets together with John and Robin, and he is bound and determined to win back his castle. And they find this old scarlet coat, and because they figure he's a dandy, and they put him in that, and that's how he becomes Will Scarlet.
Ah. Well, what a great idea, sort of playing off the famous story.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's great.
That's a Will and Scarlet by Matthew Cody. This would be for kids how old?
For read aloud, I would, you could probably go down to fourth grade level. But I think fifth grade boys would love it, sixth grade boys. Girls would like it too, because, there's you're not quite made Marion yet, but there's some girls in there. And I think there probably will be more adventures with Will and Robin.
Okay. Well, now for a book suggested for middle school age kids and older. This book is titled Far, Far Away by Tom McNeil, Kate.
Yes, this is another retelling of a classic tale. This one is a retelling of Hansel and Gretel. And it takes place in the small town of Neverbetter and is narrated by the ghost of the Jacob Grimm, one of the Grimm brothers, who told the original Hansel and Gretel story, or wrote it down at least. And Jacob has become friends with a boy in this town named Jeremy Johnson Johnson, speaking of characters with great names, who has the unique ability to hear ghosts. The town has been suffering from a rash of missing persons lately, and Jacob has been trying to figure out what's going on with these people. Jeremy has also become friends with a new girl in town named Ginger Boltinghouse, and she has a thirst for adventure and no fear whatsoever. And Jeremy begins to get in trouble with her, and they've garnered the interest of the jolly Santa Claus-like town baker Stan Blix.
Ah.
And if you read Hansel and Gretel, you do not want the attention of the baker. And the story continues when Jeremy and Ginger go missing.
Why didn't you want the attention of the baker? Remind me.
Because he's going to bake you and eat you.
Oh, that's
it's
right.
The witch in
disguise. My kids are getting older. I haven't read that one for a while.
So this is a great read for middle schoolers who maybe want to get into horror. There's plenty of suspense because if you know Hansel and Gretel, you realize what's going to happen. And it's just creeping along, coming up. But it's also great for older readers who like to read into familiar stories. I love reading retold fairy tales because it's kind of comfortable. You know where it's going, yet you don't. And it's great for them as well.
Okay, that's Far, Far Away by Tom McNeil, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Dennis, let's come back to you here. Mr. Max, the Book of Lost Things.
Right, and this is the first in a series again, and by one of those old favorite authors, Cynthia Voigt. And it's different from some of her other ones. It's really a lot of fun. It's kind of an old-fashioned sounding story about a boy named Max Starling. And his parents are the owners and the stars of the Starling Theatrical Company. When they sail off for an adventure abroad, he accidentally gets left behind. He misses the boat, and when he gets to the dock, it turns out
when that happens.
There never really was any boat called the Star of Kashmir. So we immediately have a mystery. It soon becomes apparent that they are the victims of some kind of mysterious foul play. So Max is left on his own. He's 12 years old, and he lives across the road from his Grammy, who is a wise, no-nonsense librarian.
I knew there'd be an angle here somewhere. Yeah.
Right. So they have to solve the mystery of what happened to his parents, but also Max needs to find a way to make a living. Librarians, as we all know, don't get paid very much.
That can't be right.
He is not sure what a 12-year-old boy can do, but he sort of stumbles accidentally into becoming a kind of private investigator. Mm-hmm. He doesn't like the term detective or investigator, but he finds things for people. And with the use of his parents' theatrical costume collection, looks different to everybody who meets him in the town as he takes on these various jobs. And he becomes known as Mr. Max, the Solutioneer. So it's just a fun, old-fashioned kind of sounding story. It has just the right mix of mystery and heart.
That sounds great. And this would be for grades what?
Oh,
5 through 8 you have here.
That sounds, I think that's right.
Sounds about right?
Yes.
Yeah. That's Mr. Max, the Book of Lost Things by Cynthia Voigt.
Yes.
All right. Well, Debbie, let's roll on here to a story with some very significant local ties. This book is titled Hoop Genius, How a Desperate Teacher and a Rowdy Gym Class Invented Basketball.
Yes, for many, many years, I would have parents and kids ask me, do you have any books on James Naismith? And there was never anything.
Really?
Right.
Yeah.
And now something has come out. It's a great picture book. It tells the story of James Naismith and how he was assigned to teach this gym class, which already had two teachers quit because they couldn't control these young men. And he comes up with this idea of, you know, having them shoot into a basket. So it's an illustrated biography. Which
sounds like such
pictures.
A simple idea.
Yeah, I know.
Look what it became. Yeah.
I know. And it's just a fun read. And you've got your basketball kids. You've got your KU people who want a picture book to give their future KU fans. This is the book for them.
And so it tells – is it a true story?
Yes, this is a true story. And it has an afterword where, you know, it fleshes out the facts somewhat. But, yeah, and inside the cover are the typewritten rules –
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, will, you know, someday be housed at KU. But
are they still not over there?
I don't think they are quite. Yeah, they're going to build. I think they're going to build a special building
case.
For it.
Yeah.
Whatever. But if you want a copy of them, it's in this book. So
yeah.
It's really a fun read. And in the back of the book, you have present day basketball, and they are dressed in, of course, the crimson and the blue. It doesn't say Kansas on it because there might have been some issues with that, but we know who those basketball players are.
Whenever we talk about stuff like this, I always think about how you just wish James Naismith could just drop in for an hour and see what his game has become. And you just wonder what he would think about Michael Jordan and all this stuff if he could see it today, you know?
Well, what a big business. You know, he did it to sort of distract these young men who were just – I mean, yes,
they were just rowdy kids in class. And he was trying to control
course,
the kids. Yeah.
Of course, you know, he came to KU and everything, and he saw what happened to college basketball. But to be what it is now, I don't think anybody would have dreams that college basketball would be what it is today.
Did he live for a bunch of years afterwards to look back and see even what his game was sort of evolving to become?
Well, he was around with Fog Allen, so.
Oh, that's right. Of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, again, that book is Hoop Genius, How a Desperate Teacher and a Rowdy Gym Class Invented Basketball. Great. That tells you the story.
Oh,
right
yes.
There.
It's mm-hmm. right there. So it's great gift from Santa or anybody.
Okay. Our phone number here, if you want to join our conversation, perhaps recommend a good book you came up with from 2013, 816-235-2888. Our email address, UpToDate@kcur.org, or you can tweet us at @KCURUpToDate. We're talking about the best kids' books from 2013. Kate McNair, let's roll over to Reality Boy by A.S. King.
This is a great read for anybody who loves to watch reality TV mm-hmm. or wonders what happens to reality TV stars after the cameras turn off.
Imagine that's a good question,
yes,
actually.
Imagine having your worst moments caught on film and broadcast nationally. When he was 5 years old, our main character, Gerald Faust's mother, signed them up for Network Nanny. And in 1 hour, Gerald became a national phenomenon for taking a dump on the family's kitchen table. And 12 years later, Gerald haunted by the actions of his childhood self. He's ostracized at school. He's bullied by his older sister. His parents ignore him. And he attempts to control his anger issues through boxing workouts and trips to an imaginary world he calls Jer's Day, where everything is made of ice cream and goes his way. And then he meets Hannah, a troubled writer, and he knows that she's going to cause a ruckus in his life. But Gerald can't resist the possibility of finally connecting with someone. And Gerald and Hannah share their lives through some flashbacks back to Network Nanny, and the two decide that they are going to kidnap themselves and hold themselves ransom from their parents to make a point.
Wow. Okay. Well, you do wonder about those reality shows.
Oh,
you also wonder how much of it's staged all to begin with.
And they have that too. They have producers that are telling him to do things that he knows are wrong. Mm-hmm. And his mother just wants to be famous, and his father doesn't step in and say no. It's a really interesting and poignant story. A.S. King has a great way. I'm not a character-driven person. I don't read books that are character-driven, but I love Gerald. I just wanted to invite him over to stay to get him out of his house. She does a great job building these characters. You fall in love with them.
Give him a hug like the hockey lady.
Yes, exactly.
Right. That's right.
That's Reality Boy by A.S. King, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, apparently her husband did work behind the scenes on a reality show at one time, the author's husband, one of those where people redo furniture or rebuild houses. But But her husband was the one behind the scenes who was really doing the work. But then it was like the stars.
Not so real reality TV.
Julie emails us this. I'd like to recommend a new book, Norm and Bernie, if I've seen that right. The Black Square by Jay Hostler and Peggy Harrison. It's about a 12-year-old boy and his dog, Bernie, who take many adventures back in time through the mysterious OnPad app, The Black Square. I haven't read a book written for a 12-year-old since I was 12, but I did enjoy this. That's the Norm and Bernie, The Black Square.
I've not heard of that one. Sounds fun, though.
Okay. But there's a big trend of adults reading books for kids and young adults. And I think it's a great trend because that's where all the best books are.
Right.
Yes, they are.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Dennis Ross, let's move over here to Zombie Baseball Beatdown. Right. And if you can say this author's name, I'll give you.
I call him Paolo Bacigalupi.
That's better you than me on that one.
And he had a couple of very well-received future dystopian novels in recent years. And this one's completely different, but how can you pass up a book with a title like Zombie Baseball Beatdown?
I mean, there are those zombies
again. It has baseball and zombie cows. I mean, what else do you need to know?
Zombie cows?
Yeah.
Now we're going somewhere.
Yeah, there's these 13-year-old boys named Robbie and Miguel and Joe and their buddies, and they play on the baseball team in a small town in Iowa, and the coach is a major league jerk. And the main reason that they don't win is because he's such a jerk. And they practice next to this large, very smelly meat packing plant that has a pretty foul drainage lagoon next to the field. And one day the coach comes stumbling out of the lagoon looking for brains. So everything changes after that. In this read aloud, we're about to hear the boys have armed themselves with baseball bats and are following the coach into the field of corn to see if they can take care of him.
Well, Cody Newell from KCUR's up-to-date staff will read from Zombie Baseball Beatdown.
It stood up. Is that Mr. Cocoron? Joe asked. I elbowed him in the ribs. I told you he was a zombie. No real life person would swim in that. That's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen. Except it wasn't. Because right after that, the zombie flopped over the feedlot fence and attacked the cows. And that was even more disgusting than just being a zombie covered head to toe with cow manure. The cows backed away from the zombie, but it kept going after them, hurting them as they ran back and forth trying to escape. The zombie wasn't very good at chasing because it was slow, but it didn't stop either. Finally, the zombie caught a cow by the leg and bit in. The cow went bonkers, mooing and galloping around and dragging the zombie with it. The zombie bounced up and down, and the manure splashed everywhere as the cow shook it, but the zombie didn't let go. It got a better hold on the cow, climbed onto its back, and started tearing in. "Am I really seeing this?" Joe asked. "Well, I am," Miguel answered. The cow kept banging around, but the zombie hung on like a tick. It started chewing into the cow's head, deeper and deeper. Finally, the cow just fell over, and the zombie started to chow down. Miguel and Joe and I watched the zombie snarf cow brain. Miguel whistled. "That could have been you, Rabbi." That's when Mr. Cocoron burst out of the corn.
That's Cody Newell reading from Zombie Baseball Beatdown, which reminds me of one of my great fears as a child. Being raised, I used to go to Michigan to a cottage there, and I used to always had to go use the outhouse. I used to always worry as a 5- and 6-year-old I was going to go down that hole.
Oh, yeah.
And I did not want to do that. You know, what a terrible thing that would have been. Okay. Debbie, how about the book Locomotive?
Yes, this is an illustrated nonfiction book. It's by Brian Floca, who's done a number of nonfiction picture books. He did Moonshot. And in this one, Locomotive, takes place in the 1860s when the Transcontinental Railroad has just been completed. And it's the story of passengers and crew, and they start off in Omaha, Nebraska, and they end up in Sacramento, California.
Wow.
And it's beautifully illustrated. It's gotten a number of it's been on a number of best books of the year.
Wow.
It's one of the New York Times best illustrated books of the year. It's really an excellent book. If you've got your train lovers, even an adult would like this picture book because his illustrations are just exquisite. And, you know, there's humor in the illustrations as well. Brian Floca has that way of doing it, but
yeah,
it's
oh wow,
it's very very awesome.
You're showing me the cover of the book, which is you see the train coming right at you on the track. Mm-hmm. This is for kids.
Well, preschoolers would enjoy it. I mean, we always would have kids that want train books, and so I would say 4 years. There's a fair amount of text in it, but you know, the illustrations themselves, there's a lot of onomatopoeia in it. So,
oh, it looks terrific. Oh, just beautiful. Yeah.
It's really an excellent, excellent book for any train aficionado, whether adult, child. Well, it speaks to the child in all of us.
Yeah. That's Locomotive by Brian Floca.
Right.
Okay. Sounds great. Well, Dennis and Kate have a joint recommendation here, if I'm reading this correctly. Relish, My Life in the Kitchen by Lucy
Knisley, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
And this is a great time of year to talk about food. I don't know about you, Steve, but in my family, we have a traditional Christmas dinner. We eat the same thing every year. Yeah. I get really excited knowing that my favorite side dishes, my favorite mashed potatoes are going to be on the table, because our memories are connected to food. And we can always think back to those great foods that we had and that great experience
we had
around them.
And what foods trip those memories for you?
Oh, my family has a day, they would call it 24-hour salad that has like fruit and stuff in it. Ooh. And as a child, I used to call it day-old salad, which didn't sound very good, but it's my favorite dish ever, and we only cook it at holidays, so it's what I look forward to every year. But if you are a person who loves food, if you the smell of baking cookies makes you think of family memories, this is a great book. It's written by the daughter of a caterer and a foodie who grew up both in New York City and on a farm outside of New York. And it's all about just the different foods in her life that shaped it, from eating sushi in Japan while visiting a friend to junk food that she would sneak at home.
Right.
And it's a graphic memoir, and the pictures are gorgeous. And then there's about a half a dozen to 10 recipes in here for different foods. So if you have a young foodie that you're looking to give a present to, this is a great pick.
And that book again is Relish, My Life in the Kitchen.
And it's graphic, but the writing is just really excellent, too.
Oh, it is.
It's striking.
And I can't wait to try some of the recipes.
Right. We have already tried a couple.
I made some mushrooms last night.
They sounded delicious.
Well, I should point out that a complete list of all the books we talked about today will be on our website, kcur.org. Just look for the up-to-date page. And you guys were great. Happy holidays to all of you.
Well,
thank you for coming in again.
Sure, it's
always so good to have you here. Mm-hmm. You've got our librarians from Johnson County, Kate McNair, Dennis Ross, and Debbie McLeod. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. You can follow me at Steve Kraske. Tomorrow on the show, we'll sit down with one of my favorite guys, the man behind our show's music, saxophonist Bobby Watson from UMKC. Also, the latest 90 Mile View and our weekend to-do list. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Denny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, and Cody Newell. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.